So I became a ghostwriter almost by accident. I was looking for a mom hustle, basically. I was pregnant with my second daughter and knew that I wanted to shift into doing some work that I could do from home. And so I started just looking through job ads on Indeed and found this interesting job ad from a company, which at that time was called Book in a Box. And as I read the description, I just thought, this sounds super cool. This sounds super interesting. And so I saw at the bottom that there were, over 70 people have already applied for this position. And so I thought, well, it seems like a long shot, but I'm gonna go for it. This just seems so cool. So I applied. It was about a 4-month interview process, and at the final interview, I remember, as this scribe higher up is offering me the job, I was like, oh my gosh, I'm so excited. Like I saw that, over 70 people had applied for this job, and she said, wait, how many did you see? And I said, when I clicked on it, it said 70. And she said, no, 1,000 people, over 1,000 people have applied for this job. So
Wow.
it felt like just this dream position. And started sort of at the bottom. They quickly moved me to where I was doing the interviews with authors, which I loved. And so then I was interviewing and writing the manuscripts myself. And then I want to say in 2020, then there were sort of a series of promotions. And so at the end, I was one of Scribe's top ghostwriters. So I was working with their VIP and elite clients. I was coaching the other manuscript creatives. There were sort of several different tiers. So I was mentoring a lot of folks, and then also working with our guided author population, which were people writing books themselves, but looking for some editing and some book coaching support. So that's how I became a ghostwriter. And it's just been an awesome job. Like I love the learning. I love the connecting with the authors. And then it just feels like this fun puzzle to figure out how to put it into words.
That's awesome. So how many books have you worked on when you were at Scribe? And then how many books have you worked on since the meltdown? Or how many books are you currently working on?
Over the course of my work with Scribe, I guess just doing the manuscript writing, I think my total at this point is close to 20.
Wow.
And part of that was because what's funny is that is not a large total. I think comparative, there are some folks that have a much higher number than that. I think one of the reasons why I was successful at Scribe is because I was very deliberate about not taking on too much at any given time. When my girls were still young, I was using the nap windows to write. Like that was my writing time. And so I would just do one project at a time early on. But then I think because I was able to give those projects so much focus, those always went really well. And so then as my girls got older and more independent and more work time was available, then I started doing more. And so now I am able to work at a larger capacity, which is great.
That's awesome. Do you think there's a qualitative difference between an author who writes their own work and an author who hires a ghostwriter?
Qualitative how?
Well, I wonder if this was a
Yeah.
topic that I covered in a previous episode. I wonder if the rise in ghostwriters has samified most ghostwritten work to the point where there's a
Huh.
qualitative difference when an author writes their own work.
Interesting. I think that's a really interesting idea. I know that when I've worked with people from all over the professional world. I've worked with doctors who want to write in a very clinical, scientific, articulate way. And then I've worked with, these bootstrapping CEOs who are proud of their blue collar roots and want it to be casual and full of cuss words and, stories. And kind of everything in between. And I guess part of what I believe my job is to internalize my author's voices so that each manuscript is unique. And I think that's something that I do really well. I think that's one reason why I've been able to be successful, is because I think each manuscript should be really distinct to the person who's bringing the ideas, and it should capture who they are as a person. By the same, I guess, sort of on the flip side to that, there are ways that people can make, if they're doing their own books, there are ways that will be unique to them simply because they are a unique person. And if it's their first book, it will be a unique book. Mm-hmm. But I know that, like my husband, for instance, when he writes, he tends to write much more formally than he speaks. Mm-hmm. And so actually when he does his own writing, it doesn't sound
like him.
Like him. It doesn't sound like him. And I remember I had one author who laughed after I sent her an excerpt, and she said, "You write my voice better than I write my voice." Mm-hmm. And so I think depending on the author, sometimes actually I think a book can be more unique, more compelling, more distinct if you've got a professional writer who's invested in their voice working on it. You can also have authors who have great ideas, but maybe because they're not as comfortable engaging in the craft of writing, it actually falls flat instead of really capturing their unique voice. But there are also very poorly written, ghostwritten books mm-hmm. that do have that sameness, that flatness you're describing. And there are self-written books that are stunning because of the closeness between the author and their material. Yeah. So I think it depends on the author. I think it depends on the book. I think it depends on the ghostwriter.
You talked about being inspired by the way that Baruch sort of like hitched his wagon to Jeremiah being like his job not being to write, and how that inspires you to think very carefully and choose very carefully who you decide to work with. How do you make those decisions?
Oh, I love this question. It's important to me that the book is something I can believe in. And I think for me, I mentioned that I like reading the Bible a lot, and my faith is really important to me, and the Same. Principles and the concepts, that's awesome. That's really cool to hear. The principles, like loving your neighbor, being a servant leader, seeking to promote justice and help the oppressed. In my own faith walk, I grew up with a real mindset of legalism, and in living into the grace that I believe is the true promise of the gospel, I have found freedom from so much of what used to bind me up in fear. And I think a lot of the readers that my authors are speaking to are in some sort of similar pain or feeling bound up. So in the instance of a functional medicine book that I worked on, these are readers that are not living into abundant life because they are engaging in practices that are actually really debilitating to their bodies and to their health. Or mm-hmm. I've done a lot of leadership books. And so in those cases, you've got these leaders whose businesses are stagnating because they are struggling with a personal issue, or they're not able to lead their teams effectively because of maybe some self-awareness that they haven't developed. And so we are able to, we find ourselves stuck in so many ways. And what many of my authors are trying to do is help people to get unstuck. And so if I can buy into their method, for instance, I mean, this author that I was talking to, I'll give him a shout out because he's been really open about our partnership together, but Kyle McDowell, Begin With We. I mean, we don't, I think we have worldviews that differ, but his concepts are so in line with what I base my life around. You know, he talks about moving from a me-oriented style of leadership where it's all about one-upsmanship and pushing other people down so that you can raise up. And he talks about the burnout that leads to and the toxicity that leads to. And his whole approach is, how can we work together? How can we lift each other up? How can we hold each other to accountable for great performance? And it just was so easy to wholeheartedly buy into Kyle's concepts and write a book that we both felt really passionately was gonna help other people. So it's awesome when I happen to work with other Christians. I love that. There's always just a level of vulnerability that we're able to mm-hmm. reach when we're both coming to the table with that shared worldview. But I also learn a ton from authors who have different perspectives. But I think where we always find that overlapping Venn diagram is in our shared values, that we want to spread hope. We want to help other people to live into greater freedom, greater abundance, greater healthier connections to other people. And if we're able to align in those ways, then it's such a privilege to get to buy in and to get to bring those ideas into life.
Yeah. Just on this topic of faith. And I mean, this interview is about to only be for a few people, or maybe someone will be inspired by this, but I think that there are a few biblical principles to apply here. One of them obviously is like our character should match who we say we are. So we got to be careful about taking on projects just for a paycheck. Like if I'm going to take on a project with somebody that I'm not ideologically aligned with, I want them to enter my frame. And basically we're not going to produce something that I ideologically would be like upset with myself that I produced. So that's like one biblical principle. I think the other one is just the treasure principle in general, the idea that like everything that we own belongs to the Lord and we have to treat it that way. And so if God's going to bless me with wealth, maybe, you know, through business acumen, I'm able to like get clients and get blessed with wealth. That wealth isn't for me. And it's not wrong to enjoy wealth, but ultimately that wealth isn't for me. So that's the other biblical principle. There's the first fruits idea, which you talked about, which is like, in what ways am I giving? Like literally like in today's, like that was, you know, there was an agrarian context in which it was said to give your first fruits. Yes. We don't have farms, we have businesses, but those businesses produce fruit. And so in what way are we offering our first fruits to the Lord? And then another one that I don't hear a lot of people talk about because it's kind of obscure. It's from the Old Testament. It's this Old Testament principle that is written in the law to the Israelites. And it's like when a landowner, when a farmer is collecting crops from his field, he's to tell his servants, hey, when you go into the field to collect the crops, anything that you drop, leave on the ground. That is for the poor. So in other words, like the byproduct of your, I take this principle to mean that like the byproducts of my business are meant to be donated to the poor. So like if I, so like a practical way that this comes out is like, I'm thinking about a missionary friend of mine, my brother-in-law actually. So he's working on a book. Well, I've been spending the last year and a half beating my head against the problem of how this specific problem, how does an unknown author sell thousands of copies of a book predictably in a short period of time? And I've literally just been banging out these strategy guides that solve that problem.
Wow.
Well, okay, that's a byproduct of my business. Obviously, I'm going to sell that to clients, but I'm not going to sell that to my friend who's a missionary. He's going to get that as a gift. That's like, and I just think of that as the equivalent of like when I'm going through my field and I drop a piece of grain, I'm not going to pick that up and try to sell it. Like that's a byproduct of the business. So those are just a couple of the core ways that I'm trying to think about it biblically.
I love that. And it's that the gleaner's imagery. And you know, what's so cool is that it sounds like by you leaning into this challenge that you discovered with your brother-in-law, it's actually caused a lot of creativity and generation in you, because he's not the only one with this problem. And this is something.
Well,
that
yeah, I've been beating my head against this problem specifically for my clients. Like the majority mm-hmm. of my clients are unknown authors. This is either their okay. first book and they don't have an audience, or, yeah. Or this is, you know, their second book and they don't have an audience. Like most of the clients of Dinosaur House and Stonecrest are not people with audience. We've got a couple that are, but, mm-hmm. And I found that most ghostwriters, you know, they sell a $30,000 or a $30,000 to $60,000 project to somebody, and that person writes, you know, a great book, but the ghostwriter has no idea how to market it, and the author has no idea how to market it. Mm-hmm. And so mm-hmm. somebody has got to provide some real high quality answers to this question of mm-hmm. how do you, as an unknown author, solve this problem. And mm-hmm. I've been able to personally solve it with my own life, just touring as a kids book author. So, and I'm God wired me in such a way where I get really excited by hard problems that require you mm-hmm. to like beat your head against to solve. So mm-hmm. yeah. So anyways, that's how I've been thinking about it. But it was like, when I found out that, you know, my brother-in-law is trying to write a book, I'm like, now here's the only problem though, is I have found that people have to spend some money in order to be invested. And I don't want to charge my brother-in-law, but it is frustrating to give stuff away for free, knowing that if the person would just apply it, it would be successful, but because they haven't spent any money, they're not invested enough to apply it.
Yeah. Yeah. And I mean, I think actually I've heard that principle applied to counseling too, because sometimes there's this question of like, oh, this person, you know, would benefit so much from counseling, like if only this person could get it for free. But the thing is, like, your own investment does change things. Like it means you show up, it means you take it seriously. So I don't know if free is necessarily the answer. But I do, you know, I think everything that you're saying makes so much sense in terms of, you know, we are blessed to be a blessing. And so what are ways we can actively do that?